those big bands like the Caballeros. They don't. Mm. They're not volunteering their time. We have to pay them.
Yes,
they get paid. It's a paid appearance.
Absolutely. So, and the high school bands are also paid.
I am.
My name is Kevin Van Hentenrick of the Hunter Stone Carving Seminar, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Tune in to Radio for Open Ears Tuesday, June 4th at 6:30 p.m. WGXC has an extra web stream of the Catskill Town Board meeting live. Go to wgxc.org and click on the listen button. Scroll down to find the live web stream of the Catskill Town Board meeting at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 4th. Turn out in person or tune in at wgxc.org. Recording of the meeting will be in the audio archives at WGXC a few hours after the meeting.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Christine Boak of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we give you an update on Julian Assange and the United States' efforts to extradite him.
If they ever get their hands on him, he's looking at 175 years in prison. In the meantime, it's been reported that he's in the hospital wing of the top security Belmarsh prison in northeast London.
And Mike, we have a special guest next week.
Daniel Ellsberg. Ellsberg was charged with the same crimes Julian Assange is charged with. No one in this country knows more about the Espionage Act than Daniel Ellsberg. Please tune in next week.
We'll also have an update on the release of two members of the Move 9 from prison.
Two women who were sentenced in 1978 to 30 to 100 years in prison. Two innocent women who just got out 2 weeks ago.
Suicide rates are on the uptick in the United States. How do extenuating conditions like the economy impact this?
47,000, mostly older white males, have killed themselves since the recession. How do inequalities in jobs, health, housing, and medical care affect the suicide rate? And who is it that we're losing?
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
Heidi, 2 weeks ago, two women members of the MOVE organization, Janet Holloway Africa and Janine Phillips Africa, were paroled after serving 40 years in prison as a consequence of their being convicted over a 1978 incident. Heidi, tell us what the MOVE organization is, and let's talk then about what happened in 1978.
Michael, the MOVE organization began in Philadelphia. It was run by John Africa with the premise that African Americans... Michael, the saga of MOVE was one of the most dramatic incidents of the 1970s black liberation struggle. MOV members lived in a communal house with their founder, John Africa. And all members took that last name of Africa to show that they were a family. They campaigned for equal treatment of African Americans. They also had a respect for nature and animals and cared for, I think, up to 50 stray dogs in their house. Their unconventional attitudes brought them into conflict with their neighbors in Philadelphia. They became targets of the Philadelphia police, which is a force known for its level of brutality and racism. In 1978, in August, officers really brought their house under siege. Officer James Ramp was shot during that siege. Now, the authorities blamed the shooting and death on members of MOV. However, MOV always asserted and continues to this day that he was killed by friendly fire. In 1985, police bombed the MOV house by dropping an incendiary bomb from a helicopter. And the authorities let that bomb and the fire continue without intervening. There's actually a documentary made about it called Let It Burn. But the outcome was that 9 members of the MOV family, 4 women and 5 men, were arrested. And as you mentioned, they were sentenced to from 30 years to life in prison. 2 of them died in prison, Merle Austin Africa and Phil Africa, who died in 2015. And now there are 3 men still remaining, Eddie, Chuck, and Delbert.
The 1978 incident resulted in 18 police officers and firefighters getting injured. It was really awful. But the sentencing of these women who maintained their innocence to the end was one of those atrocities that remains one of the horrors of American history, I think only to be outdone by what happened 7 years later in 1985 with the bombing that you talked about. 60 homes in that neighborhood were destroyed.
Also, Michael, Janine Phillips Africa saw her baby crushed and little Phil, who at age 12, burned in the bombing.
Yeah, there were 11 MOV members killed in the bombing in 1985, including 5 children. One of those children had been born to Jeanette Holloway years before. After she was arrested, she gave birth in shackles in prison. And then the child was raised by the MOV members and died later in the bombing.
A point of interest, Janet and Janine, who were cellmates, really kept their spirits up in part by caring for a dog that was kenneled in their cell. And they trained that dog to work with vulnerable individuals. Now, like many other political prisoners we know, they also were very active in working, in their case, to help younger female prisoners. And they grew vegetables on the ground and had never had any infractions or violations. This is really a story of atrocity on the hands of the officials because they found, I believe, the MOV members way back when to be such a challenge and a threat to authority.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. I think the vengeance that they displayed against these MOV members is carried out today with the vengeance against Mumia. Talk about that.
Well, Mumia was one of the few journalists who actually reported regularly on what was happening with MOV. He also was outspoken in terms of critiquing the Philadelphia police and was listed in Philadelphia Magazine shortly before his arrest as being one of the several figures to watch, a young person who was going to be successful. He had been a member of the Black Panther Party, as I'm sure many of our listeners recall. And at his trial, there were, I think, something like 25 constitutional violations, really a textbook example of what prosecutors should not be doing at trial. And yet, as listeners know, for decades, until recently, there's been really no cause for hope in his case. But that's changing right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that. There was a man named Williams who was also in prison in Pennsylvania who brought a petition and won on the grounds that the main prosecutor in Philadelphia, later ascended to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and then had a chance to rule on Williams' conviction. Well, Mumia is in the same position. And enough pressure was put on the newly elected district attorney in Philadelphia so that he's not going to oppose Mumia getting a new trial. Well, the state of Pennsylvania could never convict Mumia at a new trial, and they know that. So if he wins a new trial based on the appearance of impropriety on behalf of the chief prosecutor who became a judge on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, if the appearance of impropriety, and there certainly is upheld, Mumia will get out. So we now have a glimmer of hope here.
A fighting chance, and that prosecutor turned judge, of course, was Ron Castile. The tides are changing, and even though we have some concerns about that new DA, Larry Krasner, the overall picture, of course, decades too late, seems to be shifting.
Yeah, I think so. In the meantime, we send a shout-out to both Jeanette Holloway Africa and Janine Phillips Africa, and wish them, after 40 years, no other country in the world would do this. After 40 years of imprisonment and the murder of a child, we wish them all the best now that they've come home.
Indeed.
Heidi, there's a three-sentence insight by the great American satirist, and I would say great American cynic, H.L. Mencken, who was the editor of the Baltimore Evening Sun. 99 years ago, exactly, he wrote a statement that I think requires our consideration. Please read it.
As democracy is perfected, the office of the president represents more and more closely the inner soul of the people. On some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last, and the White House will be occupied by a downright fool and a complete narcissistic moron.
I think the only accurate thing in Mencken's observation is that Trump is a complete narcissist.
Michael, as our listeners may know, on May 23rd, a grand jury in the Eastern District of Virginia, in the case of Julian Assange, returned a superseding indictment. He's now charged with 17 counts of violating the Espionage Act and one count of conspiring to violate the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Now, Julian is in prison in the UK, and I understand that he's now in the hospital wing, that he's not doing so well. Michael, what role, if any, do you think the CIA and the corporate media have played in smearing Julian and undercutting his support?
Well, what they've done, which has been documented by the recent release of a Pentagon secret report, the report was prepared by the Cyber Counterintelligence Assessment Branch of the Pentagon. And here's the money quote from this report. Agents are, quote, directed to discredit WikiLeaks and smear Julian Assange personally. And the way they've done that, with a great degree of success, I think, is to paint him not only as a rapist, and there are no there's no evidence that he's a rapist. The Stockholm chief prosecutor, Eva Finne, said, and this is a quote, "I don't believe there is any reason to suspect that he has committed rape. There is no suspicion of any crimes whatsoever." Nonetheless, they've been able to float this story somewhat successfully that Assange is a rapist. The other thing they're doing is they're saying that he collaborated with Russia and released secret American documents. What we're talking about, and I'll talk about that in a minute, are the Iraqi war tapes and other things from 2010. But the fact is, he didn't collaborate with Russia. He didn't receive these things from Russia. He said so. We had Ray McGovern on our show. Ray started the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. One of his co-members is Bill Binney. And Binney was the tech man for the NSA. He was like the main high-tech man in America. And he said it was impossible for the Russians to hack in to the DNC computer. It was a leak. It wasn't a hack. And he proved that. So they've been trying to slander Assange not only as being a rapist, but as helping Trump get elected.
One factor that we need to discuss briefly is that the U.S. has requested Assange's extradition. Now, if he's brought to the U.S. for detention before trial, we know the treatment will be much crueler than anything he could experience in the U.K. I mean, Chelsea Manning, as a point in fact, held in solitary confinement for years, put on suicide watch. So I think the U.K. has to consider that. We know that in another computer-related case, the case of Lowry Love, a British citizen charged with hacking into U.S. computer systems, the judge there ruled that Lowry had to stand trial in Britain in part because of the conditions in U.S. prisons and the risk of suicide.
Yeah, although you have to say that his conditions of consignment in the high-security prison of Belmarsh in southeast London is no walk in the park.
I mean, for sure.
He's in solitary confinement there.
Yeah.
He's denied access to visitors and phone calls, only his attorney. His attorney that visited him last week couldn't even talk to him because he was so sick. And there's been, as you say, unconfirmed reports that he's in the hospital wing of the prison.
And Michael, the decision really will be with the Home Secretary of Great Britain, who may well still be Sajid Javid by the time that decision has to be made, whether to send Julian to Sweden or the U.S.
Yeah, they've got an alternate route to get him here via Sweden. Michael Ratner was always afraid that Sweden would just lay down and send him over here. But in either case, whether he goes through Sweden or is sent directly here, it's going to take a year or more.
Yes.
In the litigation. We can only hope that Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party get elected before that because they'd stop it. But in any case, if he's sent here, he'll be tried in the Eastern District of Virginia, which is a hanging court. Every whistleblower and truth teller that they've been able to get their hands on, and there have been a lot of them, first under Obama and now under Trump, has been funneled through the Eastern District. The hanging judge there is named Burkema. Is that how you pronounce it? She'll keep the case herself. She's the chief judge. She keeps all these cases, and she denies defendants access to what she says is classified information. They can't use it in their defense. So a conviction is guaranteed. Julian is looking at 175 years in prison for the counts that you talked about. It's very difficult to defend yourself against a conspiracy charge because it doesn't require the actual commission of a crime. It's more or less of a thought crime.
And in the larger picture, Michael, I think that in addition to the plight that Julian faces, this could have severe repercussions on the state of a free press in this country.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what people have to understand, that this is aimed at the freedom of press, freedom of association, the First Amendment. The very heart of what we've got left of our democracy is now under attack by the Trump administration.
Given the seriousness of the topics that we usually cover here on Law and Disorder, from time to time we like to take a little comedic break. And this week we found some news headlines that have little bloopers in them and are quite funny. So we thought we'd read a few.
Let's never get rid of newspapers. The headlines alone make them worth keeping. Let's read some of the headlines, Heidi.
Okay. This one. Barbershop singers bring joy to school for deaf. Listen to that again. Barbershop singers bring joy to school for deaf.
That's enough. I only need to hear it once. Here's another one, Heidi. Homicide victims rarely talk to police.
Ha ha ha. Okay, I can do you one better. Miracle cure kills fifth patient.
How about bridges help people cross rivers?
I never knew that about bridges, Michael.
How about city unsure why the sewer smells?
I love that, and it's from South Haven, Connecticut.
Starvation can lead to health hazards.
Starvation can lead to health hazards. Ha ha ha. Okay, here's from the News and Observer. 17 remain dead in morgue shooting spree.
Federal agents raid gun shop, find weapons. Hospitals resort to hiring doctors. Parents keep kids home to protest school closure.
Total lunar eclipse will be broadcast live on Northwoods Public Radio. Michael, I'm trying to read the next line to see if it's worth saying. Give me a sec. I just want to continue. In that article, it says KAXE will broadcast the stargazing. Wonder how they'll do that.
Watching paint dry.
Right, watch paint dry. Diana, and we know that's Princess Di, was still alive hours before she died.
Meeting on open medians is closed.
That's classic. We can't read the next one. I think it's too X-rated. Tiger Woods plays with own balls, Nike says. Republicans, another off one, turned off by size of Obama's package.
That's really funny.
New sick policy requires 2-day notice.
Statistics show that teen pregnancies drop off significantly after the age of 25.
Great. And bugs flying around with wings are flying bugs. I love that one. Let me say that again. Bugs flying around with wings are flying bugs.
How about study shows frequent sex enhances pregnancy chances?
Huh. Marijuana issue sent to a joint committee.
Worker suffers leg pain after crane drops 800-pound ball on his head.
Oh, dear. Michael, those are classic. Do you think we have a puerile sense of humor?
Well, when you used that term with me last week, I had to look up what puerile meant.
And it's Latin.
Juvenile, childlike.
Yes.
Yes, I
Boy-like,
do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think we learned it from Michael Ratner.
Yes.
Who was the champ in that
regard.
He
would be laughing at all these.
Visit us online at lawanddisorder.org for archived programs and links to many of the issues we discuss. That's lawanddisorder.org.
suicide ranks among the top 10 leading causes of death in the United States. As rates have fallen generally in other developed nations, the number of suicides in the U.S. per 100,000 rose over 30% between 1999 and 2015. Those in midlife had the largest uptick in suicides. Researchers find that two social factors have contributed to this trend: the weakening of the social safety net and increasing income inequality. One study in the U.S. found that rising rates of suicide were closely linked with reductions in social welfare spending between 1960 and 1995. Such expenditures include Medicaid, temporary assistance for needy families, the Supplemental Security Income Program for the blind, disabled, and elderly, and children's services, including adoption, foster care, and daycare. While their suicide rates are on the decline, three European nations still have rates higher than the U.S. Those are Belgium, Finland, and France. Joining us from Great Britain to discuss these trends is Stephen Platt, Emeritus Professor of Health Policy Research at the University of Edinburgh. His research focuses on the social, epidemiological, and cultural aspects of suicide, self-harm, and mental health. Professor Platt, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
How do rates of suicide in the United States compare with other countries?
Well, we don't have information on all countries of the world, but where we do have that information, it suggests that the rate of suicide in the United States is somewhat higher than the average for the world. It's, for instance, it's the fourth highest in the countries of the Americas, North and South. But compared to some European countries, Lithuania and Russia, they have a rate that's twice as high as the United States. So, you know, it, broadly speaking, it's a bit higher than, it's somewhat higher than average, but by no means the highest in the world.
Now, in the U.S., can you tell who is most at risk?
Yes. So the figure is, we're talking about over 47,000 deaths by suicide in 2017, which is the latest information. And if you look at those deaths, but it would be the same in previous years, about 70% are males. So the first thing to say, really, is that males are at much higher risk of suicide than females, and the ratio is about 3.5 to 1. The next thing to say is that, the big differences by age in the suicide risk, with the highest rate amongst men aged 45 to 54. We use the term in the mid-years, but that's a very high rate. And in younger age groups, the rates are consistently lower. And then in terms of race, the highest rates are among whites, with the second highest among American Indian and Alaska Natives, with the lowest among Black African Americans and Asians and Pacific Islanders. So those are the big, the age, gender, age, and race. Those are the key risk factors that I've set out. But there are many, many other factors involved, but those are the three sociodemographic, if I can put it that way, risk factors which link to higher risk of suicide.
Now, let's talk about some of the other factors. Are there links between, say, socioeconomics, whether someone is working, education, that kind of factor?
Yes, there are. The suicide is often seen as a psychiatric issue because research tells us that roughly 90% of people who end up taking their lives have some kind of mental health problem or more strongly disorder at the time of death. Although I have to point out that in the majority of cases, this isn't diagnosed. It's usually discovered after the death. But the vast majority of people with psychiatric illnesses and mental health problems do not kill themselves. So it's the interaction between mental health problems and other factors which end up with people having a higher risk of suicide. And among those, factors associated with, as we call it, inequality or inequity or disadvantage, or as you say in the States, disparities, are absolutely crucial. So, for instance, we know that economic recession, the kind of economic recession, the deep economic recession that we experienced in the late 2000s, is associated with higher rates of suicide. And we know that people who are unemployed have a risk